A broadcast service of City College and the San Diego Community College District. This is Jazz FM 88.3 KSDS San Diego. I'm Dave Drexler with Inside Art. Support for Inside Art comes from the members of San Diego's Jazz 88.3. This week on Inside Art, we'll preview the Athenaeum Fall Jazz Series, kicking off September 29th with drummer Willie Jones III. But first, we welcome performance artist, comedian, writer, and elected official Christina Wong, the first ever Asian-American Pulitzer Prize finalist for drama for her solo performance piece, Christina Wong, Sweatshop Overlord. This New York Times critics pick is based on Christina's pandemic experiences sewing masks out of old bedsheets and bra straps and organizing the Auntie Sewing Squad, a nationwide work-from-home sweatshop of hundreds of volunteers to fix the U.S. public healthcare system while in quarantine. Sweatshop Overlord is an hilarious comedy that's received the Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, and Lucille Lortel Awards for Outstanding Solo Performance, and it's running in its West Coast premiere now through October 16th at La Jolla Playhouse. Christina Wong, it's a pleasure to welcome you to San Diego and Inside Art.
So happy to be here.
Well, Christina, this is actually not your first, your maiden voyage in San Diego, if I can use that term. Mm-hmm. You were an artist in residence at the San Diego airport.
Yes.
What was that all about?
If you happen to be flying daytime on weekdays in San Diego, you may have seen me. I did a project. My collaborators were Samuel Valdez and DJ Cotton Candy. And we were literally building a waiting room inside the airport. So we had passengers, visitors to the airport, write what they were waiting for on a scrap of fabric. And I was sewing basically the walls of this tiny waiting room. And basically over the course of 8 months, the waiting room sort of became like a peep show. Like you could actually go in and sort of confess and talk to one of us about what you were waiting for. And then you could also watch inside as Samuel or Candy performed stories of waiting inside that we'd collected. So it was the sort of existential space of the airport, because everyone can't wait to get to the airport or is in a rush to get there, and then they can't wait to get out. Right. So we were excited to just ask people, what the hell are you waiting for? But that was one of many projects I've done that involves sewing.
Well, that really is interesting to me. That kind of dovetails very appropriately into this current project, Sweatshop Overlord. Well, let's go back to your beginnings of sewing. What initially interested you there?
I grew up with sewing. My mother was not a professional seamstress, but it very much, for Chinese Americans, is a rite of passage. It's a very much sort of like a profession that immigrants take on, whether it's in garments. And for my paternal grandparents, it was laundries and alterations. So I've always like witnessed sewing. I'm not very good. Like, you would not pay me to tailor something. I use my sewing machine like a stapler, basically. But I love the charm of sewing my own sets and prop pieces. So I've done that for a lot of my shows. And found myself in this predicament in March 2020 when I was deemed non-essential by a pandemic. My tour was canceled, and saw that hospitals were asking for home-sewn masks. And I suddenly felt, oh, I'm essential again. Here's one thing I know how to do. And that ended up going on for about 17 months. I ended up accidentally starting a group called the Auntie Sewing Squad, which became a national collective of over 800 volunteer aunties.
And you can do the verbal acronym yourself if you're listening to this.
Yeah. so our accidental acronym is ASS. I was in such a rush when I named the group. I was just thinking this is just going to be a 3-week thing, because clearly the government is going to step in and help. Spoiler alert, that did not happen. And we were still sewing. And it wasn't initially it was hospitals. And then it became all these very rural communities, migrants approaching the border, incarcerated communities. There are just so many communities that don't have access to the English language or healthcare or water, and had a lot of access needs, and were getting hit much harder by the pandemic. And so we had to make an active effort to find them, figure out who over there was distributing things to those communities and then get them masks.
Well, this became a big, big thing.
Oh, clearly, clearly. I cannot even believe that this is my career. It became the, you know, it really just felt super hopeless. Like there were many false alarms that we might reopen again in the pandemic. And I was sort of getting to a place where I was like, I don't think theater's ever going to come back. I think it's just Zoom theater forever. Because the stuff we were witnessing as a group was so vivid. Like, I'm not a healthcare worker. I am not a relief aid worker. And yet I was being contacted by like villages in Alaska, right, that were getting hit super hard by the virus. There was at one point a hospital in Los Angeles, all the elastic on their government sent masks were broken. And I had four rolls of elastic for them, you know, and it was just so crazy to witness this from the vantage point of this, like, I was like this guerrilla soldier with a sewing machine. So I was sort of telling these stories as the pandemic was rolling along, and New York Theater Workshop asked me to open their live season in the fall. And part of me was like, oh, we're never going to reopen. This is going to get postponed. Like everything has been getting postponed. But it premiered to a live audience and is a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. You know,
How does that feel?
More than insane, insane. I am having multiple Kiss the Rings moments where I'm just like, bow down. You know, I mean, I just feel like this is, it was such thankless work at the time. And that's also why I do the show, because I feel like it was a terrible, terrible time. And I witnessed so much generosity like I had never known in my life. I have never been this generous in my life. I can't even believe I'm this person. Like, I thought I'd be the person, you know, during the rapture, running away with a shopping cart, fighting people with a pipe, you know, but here I am like, oh, this is new. This is a new side of me. Empathy. I didn't know I had that, you know? And so all this was really surprising, but to also witness that of other people, because it was terrifying in those first few weeks. Going to the post office felt like I was, you know, putting my life massively at risk just to, you know, send a box of masks, and to see so many other aunties willing to do that, willing to drive across town, send their, you know, we had people drive over an hour to come pick up materials from me just to sew them for people they didn't even know. You know, that to me is something I want to share that I witnessed, because I do feel like we saw a lot of ugly divisiveness, which still is here. But what I witnessed was sort of this amazing moment where a small community really came together, and we didn't know each other before, to take care of people we'd never met before. And to me, that's the message I want to leave folks with.
When did you think you had a show out of this?
About a month in. People kept saying, this is going to be your next show. And I'm like, no. Right now I'm trying to stop a genocide. You know, I'm not thinking about shows or anything. But I think because just the chaos of it all, and, you know, it really sort of surprised me who stepped up and who did not, and who was very forthright with giving unsolicited advice, and those who actually were useful and helpful. And it felt like so much of the show was to try to clarify to the people who could not understand that sewing is actually a craft, a skill. That it takes a lot of time. Like, just because it's not like you're used to Amazon Prime where you press two buttons and a bunch of stuff shows up at your door the next day. This was not that situation. I didn't know how to sew masks before this. We were all sort of teaching each other and learning, and then trying to recreate distribution systems in a moment when all the fabric stores were closed. And, like, you know, and so, so a lot of this was to almost sort of clarify to the rest of the world just how hard this is. And, and also just sort of get off my chest this, but, and to just offer these snapshots of moments I was witnessing. So really it was a month in. And so I was working on it throughout the pandemic, and there was no real plot. It would just sort of end at whatever day we were at in the pandemic. But once I had to sit down and make it for a live audience, I had to do a little bit more reflecting. So it wasn't just screaming for 1 hour, which is what it really felt like in the pandemic. It was like an adrenaline on adrenaline. It was so nuts.
So you brought in director Che Yu to help you with this project. Maybe you can describe his role.
Che I've known forever, and but I've never worked with him like this. And he notoriously is very minimalist. And I was like so excited to work with him because his directing is notoriously gorgeous but spare. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like Hoarders, and he's like Marie Kondo. And you know, like, but he's been great. And it's funny because he's Singaporean, and they require all men in Singapore to be part of the army for a couple of years. And to see this very much as a war story, right? I'm the soldier with a sewing machine, and my masks, the masks are our weaponry, right? And to see him pull that vocabulary out in his direction is just fantastic and really fun to watch.
At this point, have you made any alterations, if I may use that term, to the show?
Yes. Well, there is a short section I added to the end to reflect the year since the aunties retired. I caught COVID in January. I'm vaccinated, so it was horrible, but it was I didn't have to go to the hospital. So reflecting a lot of that and just sort of where the last few months has sort of left us in the aftermath of this community we made. But the Auntie Sewing Squad went on for about 17 months. And so the show captures about those 17 months, which is no easy task, by the way, to try to shove the entire pandemic into a one-person show. That's not super long.
I'll bet you bring in some very interesting and endearing characters to this.
Yeah, me. No, I do. I bring in a lot of characters. I share a lot of images of the aunties that joined me. My mother was actually one of our aunties, and she was super reluctant. She actually did not want me to sew in the beginning. She thought, oh my God, you're going to wear yourself out. You'll get exposure to the virus and you'll die. And
like a true mother, yes.
Spoken like a true mother. But she actually ended up recruiting all her friends to help. And we became a lot closer in this weird way. Like, I'm not telling her my secrets or anything. You know, we're not there yet. We're not like Gilmore Girls, but, but like, we now have the same friends. Now when we go out, we go on walks with our same friends, and I'm like, oh my God, I've turned into my mother. My mother and I are sharing friends. But yeah, so there's a lot of that, but also her friends are super sweet and really got into it. And it was like, yeah, it felt really cool because I've always wanted to coerce my mother to be in one of my shows, right? But she's very shy and doesn't want to do that. But this felt like the closest I could get her into one of my projects. And it also like kept her from just worrying and panicking a lot. I mean, she still worries and panics nonstop, but this helped. This helped a little bit. So there's a lot of stories about her and other aunties.
I love the name of the show. It's just so appropriate. Sweatshop, yeah. Overlord.
It started as a joke. Like, okay, this whole I was like just joking, like, oh my God, when this is all over, I'm gonna do a show called Christina Wong Sweatshop Overlord about this time in history. And then it happened. Everything about this moment is like a joke that came to life. Like, our first volunteers were mostly Asian women. And I was like, oh my God, what is happening? We're just like, we're this weird, like our grandparents and parents worked in the garment industry, like we're seamstresses, worked in sweatshops so that we would never have to do this again. And here we are doing it for free so that America can survive this moment. In a moment when everyone is mad at Asian Americans because they think that China brought this virus, right? And I say that in quotes because that's not what happened, right? And I was just like, oh my God, I'm running a sweatshop. I'm the sweatshop overlord. And so that just sort of became my nickname in the group, Overlord. And it was just like a ridiculous title for the show. And here we are many months later on a stage in La Jolla sharing this like jokey title come to life.
Well, there's some serious subject matter underneath this in terms of, for example, child labor, which there were children who were sewing with you.
We had a whole ass child labor camp, we called it. So, and that was also a joke that came true because we were, you know, aunties were getting burnt out, and I was like joking. All summer school was canceled in 2020, right? Or no, yeah, summer camp and summer school, I guess. But I was like joking on Facebook, like, I'm running a summer camp on Zoom, teaching your kids how to sew so they can work heavy machinery and make masks that the government failed to provide. And all these parents wrote me and like, are you serious? Because I need to get my kid into that. And so we created this summer camp. It was so bizarre. Like, it was like, there were like kids all over the country. We timed it so that East Coast kids could go attend right before bed. And and we had aunties like talk about their careers. And then we had another meeting where like while they sewed, aunties would talk about like the efficacy of masks and all this kind of stuff. It was very sweet. And we had like child laborers in our camp. I mean, they were always working. Like a lot of the groups were all working remotely from home, but you know, we had like grandmothers, mothers, and kids like all sewing together. We had multiple generations of people working in teams. And kids were on those machines too. It was pretty crazy.
Christina, before we go, there is a book, I understand, that has come out in relation to this show. What can you give us on that?
Yes, we pumped out a book on top of all this stuff. It's called The Auntie Sewing Squad Guide to Mask Making, Radical Care, and Racial Justice. And it's an anthology written by all the aunties. It's very colorful. There are cartoons in it. You can get it anywhere you buy books online and maybe even your local bookstore. It's a beautiful document to this time and to this community. So I hope people check it out.
Oh, it sounds like a fun show with lots to laugh about and enjoy from Christina Wong, Sweatshop Overlord, running now through October 16th at La Jolla Playhouse. Christina, thank you so much for joining me on Inside Art.
You're so welcome.
Christina Wong, Sweatshop Overlord, runs now through October 16th at La Jolla Playhouse's Shiloh and Hughes Potiker Theater. You can purchase tickets and learn more at lajollaplayhouse.org. Coming up, we'll preview the Athenaeum Fall Jazz Series, which begins later this week with drummer Willie Jones III. Athenaeum jazz producer Dan Atkinson joins us next as Inside Art continues here on San Diego's Jazz 88.3. Funding for Inside Art comes from the members of Jazz 88.3, where your support brings the joy and history of jazz and all of the arts to San Diego. To become a member, visit jazz88.org/donate.